Right, by some strange coincidence, we're all playing Operation.
I really shouldn't have been out last night. I've got the jitters.
I'm the anaesthetist. I need to keep my hand steady. Ah, that's better. No, it isn't.
I'm going to go for the funny bone.
Don't touch the sides, Keith.
Oops. I was never any good at this game. Let me go in.
Yes, good morning, Mrs. Riddler. You've met my surgical team. Any questions?
She took it better than the last one.
Welcome, 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 dear listeners, one and all, to this, the latest in a long line of Staggering Stories podcasts. I'm Crumbly.
I'm Jay.
I'm Fake Keith.
I'm Adam.
I'm Jean.
I'm Asterman.
And I, yes, I am...
A pimple on the rectum of life.
Does it need popping?
He likes a good squeeze.
What is it with
we all know he's your squeezy
pimples?
Toy.
He is my huggy squeezy toy.
Yeah. Anyway, without further ado, botched operations and compensation besides, it's the news with El Presidente.
Ghosts. Big screen adaptation gets trailered.
Ooh.
The British Ghosts of Button House have a big screen adaptation to chill your bones and a new trailer to prove it. Ghosts, The Possession of Button House is set after the main series, but before the flash forward at the very end, and features all the regulars from that final series, ghosts and humans alike. Directing duties once again fall to Simon Hind, who took over as director for the final two series and the Christmas special finale. As with the series, the film is co-written by six of the ghosts, so you can expect the same type of humour and lots more teasing of Fanny Button. The trailer is out now on YouTube, and the film is scheduled for a Halloween audience on the 23rd of October, though it is unclear if that is just in the UK.
Good timing.
I love ghosts.
Should be good.
Both the UK and the US version.
I've seen the trailer. It looks funny.
It does, doesn't it? It was really good at the beginning, because Keith showed me, he said, oh, watch this. And it was quite creepy at the beginning.
And then
it wasn't creepy.
Talking of ghosts.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Ghostbusters going bang in the night.
Ooh.
The Ghostbusters franchise has had middling success in recent years, but don't count them out yet. Netflix are teaming up with Sony Pictures and Ghost Corp to fill in part of the gap between Ghostbusters 2 and Ghostbusters Afterlife via the magic of animation. Ghostbusters Night Shift will be set in 1994, 5 years after the second film and 10 since the first. As Dickless himself, Walter Peck, runs for mayor of New York, a new breed of Ghostbusters must step up when a new wave of supernatural terrors hit the city. Executive producer Jason Reitman emphasized that moving into high-end animation won't mean softening the franchise's edge.
Returning Ghostbusters to animation means delivering something as funny as anything you've ever seen in Ghostbusters and as scary as anything you've ever seen in Ghostbusters.
Little is otherwise known right now, other than a 2027 release, surely Halloween time, and a few character names, one of which, Travis, might be voiced by Jack Quaid of the Boys Star Trek Lower Decks fame.
Will it feature or have the real Ghostbusters in it?
I don't know. I'm sure there'll be some references in there. But
I'm sure there will be.
That series is non-canonical. But
Let's face it, all we need is Slimer.
And the Stay Puff Marshmallow.
Yes, indeed. Bit of Stay Puff.
James Bond. Audio mongers continue to assimilate.
What?
Those audio mongers at Big Finish have somehow managed to acquire the rights to produce audio plays of the young James Bond series of books. It should be noted that these rights remain with the Fleming estate and have nothing to do with Amgen, MGM, or Eon. The series of books follow a 13 to 15 year old James Bond, with the first five written by Charlie Higson. Of those, the first book, Young Bond : Silverfin, is being adapted as 16 roughly half-hour episode across two box sets. The story, as with the original book, is set in 1933 to match the timeline of the original Ian Fleming books and follows the details of M's premature obituary of Bond in the 1964 novel You Only Live Twice. Each box set can be had for a £25 as a download or £36 for a download and CD.
I wonder who play Bond.
They have given a name. Yeah. Nobody I recognise.
Probably good.
Potentially.
Yeah. Isaac somebody or other.
How old are they?
Mid-20s.
Oh, right.
Well, that'll
plain
be,
younger, clearly.
I said that'd be in keeping with the Grease style of puberty.
When you're 35 and still in year 12.
It would be interesting to see what it's like, because the last Charlie Higson pen series was Hyde, I do believe.
Funny enough, I've just finished playing the young James Bond PS5 game when he's dragged into MI6, and it's really good.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen trailers for that.
I keep meaning to play it myself. I've not had time.
You get to shoot lots of people.
I'm sure. Isaac Rouse.
Rouse. Never heard of him.
No.
Well, he does look kind of handsome and suave. He could play a Bond.
Which is vital on audio.
He's been in such things as The Crown, Get Even, and Genius. He played Charlie Bucket, was it Bouquet, in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory stage musical.
Okay.
All right.
So it's not exactly his first job.
His first rodeo.
I have an addendum.
What's your addendum?
Oh, I don't care that it's got nothing to do with sci-fi or fantasy. She was a voice in the Teletubbies.
Yes.
Penelope Keith.
Yes.
Dead. Penelope 86. Keith was one of the funniest actresses of her time. She played Margot in To the Manor Born. She was just absolutely wonderful.
Wonderfully and snobbish.
She was.
Audrey Forbes Hamilton.
Yeah, okay. she was brilliant, and she was what we call a national treasure.
Nice.
And she popped off aged 87.
She did have some connection to sci-fi fantasy. She was in the three episodes of The Avengers.
Oh. Perfect!
Three episodes.
65, 67 and 69.
Excellent. Good researching there, Riddler. Well done.
Yeah. I loved her as Margot in The Good Life.
Oh, good grief, yeah.
Like someone said, she managed to make this snobbish, pompous woman beloved by everyone and also made her vulnerable. And she was ever so funny. She was so cool.
Yeah, she started off in theatre first, didn't she? And then suddenly she transitioned to become a household name on television with two hit series. Because I think To the Manor Born had something like 20 million viewers.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Literally impossible nowadays, isn't it?
Yeah.
If that was on, then The Other Side, because then it was just BBC and ITV, then The Other Side tended to put on a repeat of One of My Dinosaurs is Missing or something.
Just before we recorded this, the BBC have actually put on an episode of The Good Life, and then they're doing another one of Man of Born later on.
That's right. Yeah.
And it's one of my favourite episodes of The Good Life, where they all get slightly tipsy.
Oh yes. Yeah. Bit of wife swapping going on.
Almost.
Any more news?
I have a gaggle. A gaggle
of addendums.
Is that a collective term?
Is it addendums or addendi?
I'm not sure. What's a group? Is it a group of addendums called a gaggle? Or
it is now.
Okay.
Well, it's either an appendix or appendices. So is it addendices?
Oh, it might be.
Addendices.
An addition of
one. Get on with it!
One I think we've already mentioned was Mr. Gatois being a doctor.
Oh, yeah, he was made a doctor.
It has finally happened. It is now official. He is officially a doctor.
The pictures of him in a silly hat.
and the cloak. Don't forget the cloak and the sash.
Oh, yeah.
So he can officially wear those properly now to all engagements.
I've never worn my mortar, whatever it's called.
That's because we would rip the shit out of
them. It'll be worth it just once. Two ghosts, back to ghosts.
Oh, yeah.
Again, third time.
Australian Ghost now being or will be broadcast on the BBC.
On the iPlayer or actually broadcast?
iPlayer first. I don't know whether they show the American.
No idea.
But I know that's on the iPlayer. So, yeah.
Do we know when?
Not at the moment.
The American version is on iPlayer at the moment.
Yeah, I know the American.
The American version, I've enjoyed the American version. Very, very good.
It's very good, yeah. Strange New Worlds?
Dead.
July 23rd, season 4.
Yes.
And then dead.
And then, one more season, and then dead.
Partial season.
And something else I am slightly looking forward to. Stuart Fails to Save the Universe.
Big Bang Theory spin-off.
Yeah.
The Stuart Little.
It's the owner of the comic book store, and they're cribbing slightly from Sliders. He's being shot into different realities.
Okay.
And failing to save that reality as it crashes down.
This is what happens when you hang around with physicists.
Okay, well.
Weird stuff.
Like Quinn Mallory.
Yeah, exactly. But that is going on HBO Max on July the 23rd, so it will probably be over here on either Sky or Now TV.
Is a HBO coming, or is it already here?
I don't know.
I've
got one final one.
Lie on us.
Only people like me will enjoy. July the 7th, I think it is the remake of Little House on the Prairie.
Remake?
Oh! Yeah, looks quite good, actually.
I think we can distantly link that by the fact that it's shadow involvement.
She pretends
to be an aeroplane 50 years before aircraft.
This is a new little girl. She will not convert people to the shadow race, and she will not pretend to be an aeroplane.
50 years.
Not an aeroplane, that's a shadow ship.
She
could have pretending to be a shadow ship.
Running around screaming.
She was pretending to be a condor, not a ship.
Exactly. Condor.
Yeah.
I must admit, I heard condom as well.
It sounded better first time around.
They hover on the thermals.
They do.
Condoms, they do.
That's the empty ones.
And that's the end of the news.
The Black Ridge Knobbler.
I think it's only fair that Scotling introduces what we are about to review. Over to you, O Trembly One.
We have been going back in time to my childhood.
Oh, yes.
And reliving some of the greatest hits. We've been to the cinema. Some of us have been twice, haven't we, Adam?
Indeed.
We've been to Starbucks and we've been watching a favourite of mine. You may remember an old review from an old version of this, but this time it's the new Masters of the Universe.
Pause for music. Come on then, Scott, what did you think?
Oh, I have nothing bad to say about this. It hit the ground running for me, right from the comedy in the intro, trying to explain the mythology.
Oh, yeah.
And then we hit ground running straight onto Eternia, big battle, Skeletor turning up, all amazing characters, well cast as well. And we don't spend too much time on Earth either, do we? We go there for a little bit, about 10-15
minutes. There's an establishing shot.
That's an establishing bit. And amazing special effects, so many colours, it completely dazzled me. And it got all the little Easter eggs in there, including some in the credits. I have nothing to complain about.
It was possibly the funniest thing I've seen in a long time.
I didn't get most of the Easter eggs because it's half of my time.
We'll watch it again.
But
watch all the animations.
But it was an enjoyable film.
Yeah.
All I can say about Masters of the Universe is, oh, balls.
Jean, over to you.
I thought Skeletor was wonderfully hammy. It was played the right side of sarcastic.
Yeah, actually a role he suited for.
Well, it's Jared Leto, so I don't wonder what because he's a method actor, what preparation he did for this role.
Had his skin surgery removed.
His eyes glowed up.
My only problem with him was I couldn't hear some of the lines he was saying. They were. I think the mix in where I was just slightly off.
Oh, right. Mm.
There were a couple of lines that kind of descended into something I couldn't quite hear.
I think he tended to go up and down in volume as well, because I think I missed a couple of things on the first time. But it was a good casting. But also, we finally got a proper mask, an actual skull mask rather than a rubber mask over at a face.
Yeah.
It's the scenes where he's laughing maniacally and saying how he's going to bring down his vengeance upon everyone, and all his underlings just looking quizzically at each other.
Talking of Easter eggs, did anyone...
My hand is raised! My hand is raised!
Sorry. Raise your hand. Gene!
I was going to say, when he said that, my hand is raised. This is the crescendo.
All I really wanted him to do throughout the whole film was use the word boob, because he used to call everyone a boob, didn't he? King Randall was a royal boob, and they slipped in a boob.
So they were happy to go with fisting people.
Yeah.
And Rambo. He-Man having that long, shiny thing hanging down his thigh. But saying boob was a bit too much.
Yeah, that was it. I loved it. And don't forget the man that rams.
Give his head. Give him head, ram man.
I love the silly little things, like at the end when they're all laughing and they're bent over backwards at the waist they were in the car.
Hands on hips. Rotoscope.
So good.
I did like with this that although he ended up on Earth, you didn't end up with that. He's made lots of connections and there's a family and all. You can kind of tell he stayed distance from everything else. Even his roommate is just a roommate.
Talking of the roommate, there is an argument to be made that this whole thing is just Adam having a psychotic break.
Oh, could be.
Yeah.
That none of this has actually happened and he's just gone completely Fruit Loops. Because right at the end, the roommate turns up on and then almost instantly disappears again.
Oh.
You get a long shot of the group together from the next scene, and he's not there.
Oh, that's because there was a time jump.
He
was there with them.
He was there with them, right at the end.
Yes, but then there's a big time jump before you have the scene with him going off into He-Man again.
Yeah, but that's before
in secret.
That.
Yeah, indeed.
Yes, I hadn't noticed that. But
no, I don't know.
And who absolutely detested the HR representative from hell?
They covered that well throughout the film, all that bureaucracy and everything, didn't they?
It's typical blue sky thinking, it really is.
From people who use phrases like blue sky thinking.
And we must be sensitive of other people's feelings, because after all, we're only judging Skeletor by how he looks. Not the real person inside.
No, I think we judged him because he's a knob.
Did anyone else, I know it might just be me, possibly Adam, did anyone get hairs moving on the back of their neck where he finally turned into He-Man?
I think my brother would have done, because he had Castle Grayskull and various things.
I think you'll find that was actually the air conditioning.
It kicked in.
Or that frappe I dropped in my lap.
And it was very, very subtle if you watch it just once, where when he turned into He-Man, there was this very, very slight image of Grayskull during that transformation.
There was, it did a lot with it. And once he transformed, I liked the way that he had to get used to being He-Man. He was kind of surprised by his own strength, but still a little bit goofy Adam at the same time, and growing confident. And he was kind of shocked by how he just picked up Trapjaw's arm and shot everyone.
The only thing that I was mildly disappointed with, there wasn't enough Battle Cat.
Yes.
There wasn't, there?
No. Oh, Cringer.
You had Cringer at the beginning and then Battle Cat at the end.
And Cringer reluctantly agrees to be a Battle Cat and ride them into danger, doesn't he?
Only because he wants to wear armour.
But hopefully if we get another film, there'll be a lot more of him.
Yeah, there's certainly no personality change between Adam, He-Man, and Cringer and Battle Cat. They keep their same personality, they just get more power. power, it seems. Yeah.
Did He-Man get more of a tan than Adam? I wasn't looking out for that.
Oh, but I don't know.
The hair was yellow in the cartoon with Adam, yeah. But it turned orange.
I think
that may
be a little bit more glistening.
Yeah, he was a bit more oiled.
We oiled him up a bit.
It was are a we bit talking about Mark Singer again?
Why did it have his clothes easier?
Yeah. But I thought that the costumes were really good, weren't they?
Oh,
for everyone concerned.
And the typical bombastic 80s music.
Also, how when we saw them at the end, they were pretty much in their cartoon-style costumes.
They were, yes.
They hadn't been up until that point, until right at the end.
Yeah, particularly Teela's the big transformation, isn't she? She's got that design across her chest, shall we say.
I don't think the shorts were as short, if they were indeed shorts.
No, that's true.
And I liked that Adam on Earth was wearing He-Man's colours.
Yes, he was always wearing Adam on. Big difference.
Yeah.
And even though you weren't on Earth for too long, the action does kick off quite quickly, doesn't it, with Beast-Man turning up. Yeah. The quibble I've got is that my new Beast-Man action figure doesn't quite look like the Beast-Man in the films. But that means I'll have to collect the other ones. So.
Oh dear, what a shame.
I know.
I did like with this one as well, and spoiler music,
sha-la-la-la-la,
that it wasn't the sword. Love that, the play on the I have the power.
Yes.
It's a case of Dumbo's feather or Thor's hammer.
There's a little, what's it called, a placebo?
Yeah.
I think that in some of the other animations, it's kind of been alluded to that.
I think
also.
I seem to remember with She-Ra, the original cartoon, that the sword got damaged and they did go down that direction with it. So
it got blown to pieces in this.
It did, didn't it? And then he got stabbed with it.
I think that was something in the recent Revolution cartoon that was somewhat similar to that as well.
Yes, they probably did that, yeah. They did a lot in there that was a bit of a surprise, wasn't it? Including, they killed Mothman first.
Yes, I noticed
Skeletor
that.
Skeletor barbecued him in this one. He doesn't make it through anything anymore. He's meant to be a god of the forest. So I don't think he's quite dead. He will turn up again somehow.
I've turned him into mulch.
He's like a baby Groot. He'll just grow again.
I liked the way the names of all the characters were names that Adam himself had come up with.
That was really
him,
good. Yeah.
It was
really
very
genius.
Good. And him having to own up that he'd called himself He-Man.
And trying to explain Mechaneck. I was surprised that he made it into the film, because in the 2000 X cartoon, Mechaneck's a bit of a joke, and I hadn't noticed he was a bit of a joke, because all he could do was extend his neck. In the original cartoon, that's all he did. He looked over walls.
That's quite useful.
A peeping Tom.
And I liked the cameo for
Dolph Lundgren.
Yes, that was very good. And he even quoted the Good Journey line, didn't he, from the original film.
I think we need to give a shout out for Duncan as well.
Yes.
The man at arms. I loved his character, and sort of like goes from hero to absolute drunkard.
I'm just going to sleep here next to my vomit.
Though, I've got to wonder about their military tactics.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they have swords and shields and whatever. They also have
high-tech
laser weapon, energy weapons.
Yes.
So the defenders of the castle all run in with their shields and swords, getting shot down by the people with the laser guns. Surely it's best
to... There's a lot of death in this film.
Surely the best tactic was to be match them weapon for weapon.
You do get the feeling the inhabitants of this kingdom...
Eternia.
Are much more onto their muscles, but not their brain muscle.
If anything, there wasn't enough magic in it, I think, for Eternia.
Well, there was no Orko, was there?
Except for
right at the end.
Giving Lynn, a moral as again.
Of course.
Evil Lynn's a witch, but she just sort of held her hands out. She didn't really do much. She didn't have a chance to in the film.
And it took me ages to work out that she was from Community.
Alison Brie from
That's
Community.
That's really good. Yeah. There was a lot of setup for her, maybe betraying Skeletor, which was sort of the thing she always used to do.
Yeah.
So
at
hopefully
least
we'll
once
get
a
some
week.
Yeah.
You could see that towards the end, towards the final battle.
Yes.
It's a case of realising that she's maybe not on the right side.
And we see a trailer for She-Ra at the end?
We did. We saw quite a few things, didn't we? There was a lot they couldn't fit in.
There were three after credit scenes.
Yes.
Oh, really?
There were. You had the Orko. Then you had the She-Ra.
Yeah.
And then you had the evil Lynn picking up the skull.
Oh, yes. Right. Oh, yes. The yes. Flash Gordon ending.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the bit that hit me the most was that they actually put She-Ra in there. Because usually what happens with He-Man reboots is you get as far as introducing Hordak and Etheria. And then it gets cancelled because the toys aren't selling.
Yeah.
So the fact they went straight there and cast her, and she just transformed. It was just, oh.
And using the same same type of transformation as in the cartoons as well.
Yes, with the little swirly bit around the sword. Yeah.
Scott, did you have a moment?
I did. It was definitely, it was always She-Ra that gave me a moment.
Yeah, they'd show her in such a way that they could recast her as somebody more famous if needed to.
They could, yeah. I did like the fact that she was standing in front of the Fright Zone. Mm-hmm. She's because basically she was kidnapped. She was sort of designed as an adult to go back and take over Eternia and destroy the royal family, her family. But that's the moment she realises she's got to appease for everything she's done.
This king and queen weren't very careful with their children, were they?
They weren't, no.
It was quite careless.
No.
Well, so I was a bit confused by the end. Is Adam now the king, or is he still the prince?
He's still the prince, because the king's still alive.
Well,
the queen is still alive.
The queen is still alive.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Oh, no, well, then Adam should be the king.
Well, it depends how it works, though. Does the queen inherit the throne, and then it goes to the children after her? I don't know how it works in there.
That's a silly way of doing it.
That's the traditional way of doing it. Oh. On the basis, you always know who the mother is, but you can't guarantee the father.
Yes.
It's a shame this didn't do so well at the box office. It hasn't even made what it costs. Mm. Hope that doesn't put them off making the second
one. Amazon, isn't it? So they can certainly afford to take the hit. Yeah. And they're pushing it hard on Prime and all that.
Yeah, the other thing is that Mattel only do these things for the toy sales, and there's four different ranges for this one film, including Barbie. So as long as they pick up, because I bought mine before the film came out, but only in the kids' range, so I've got three more to collect. I've still got to get my first Barbie yet. But if they pick up and Amazon couldn't absorb the costs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ironically, I can buy most of these toys from the Amazon site. So
get their cuts.
Yeah.
Recommend people go and see this. So, I was a bit dubious at first because it's never really been my thing.
Because the last thing I suggested was Lost in Space, right?
Yeah, and that was terrible.
Oh, look, it's a cat.
So what other Easter eggs did you spot there, Scott?
Oh, well, other than Merman at the end, there was lots of regular quotes that came from the original series, like the boob, things like that. Just, as you say, the costumes right at the end.
And music, any of the music taken from the cartoon?
Yes,
or
right at the end.
Oh, the music that was used in this was pretty good as well. You had Brian May doing guitar stuff the way through, and then you had that Princess of the Universe stuff.
Yes.
And then they all sort of started coughing because of whatever smoke that were. That was pretty funny.
I was, because I mean, they did drop in quite a few, alluded quite a bit to Highlander in the movie.
Oh, yes.
Oh, they did, that's right, yeah. The cheesy cops.
It is a good fun romp, I have to admit. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and it's one of those ones, if ever it came on the telly and that, I'm definitely going to give it a second watch.
I also like some of the little details that if you looked pretty close as well. So Queen Marlena, they sort of alluded to her background, they heavily alluded to the background from Earth because she wanted to send Adam back to where she came from. Also, in one of the scenes in the room, you could actually just about see her helmet. From where she came before. Yeah,
that's right, because she was
an astronaut. A scientist, wasn't she?
Yeah.
And then there was some other little detailing as well in the where Skeletor went into Adam's mind.
Yeah.
That bit when he was in the office and he was dressed up in the work clothes. You could see his ID badge, which was sort of saying Skeletor on there, and the tie had little bones on it as well.
I hadn't noticed
I spotted that when I was actually watching it on the screen as well. I just kind of figured, there's probably little touches there. And I thought that was one more thing as well from that scene, but I can't remember what it was now.
I do love the way Skeletor Daryl slaps, is it Dave from accounts or whatever?
Yeah,
Daryl. Daryl. I'm glad that it's Daryl, because obviously my brother's Daryl, and he has yet to see this film.
Whilst we have a He-Man expert in the room, I've often wondered why Castle Grayskull is good, yet Skeletor, who is a skeleton skull, is bad.
Yeah, that's right, yes. All the bad stuff is in Snake Mountain, isn't it?
I'm not surprised how close Castle Grayskull was to Eternus.
It's literally on the doorstep, isn't
it? Yeah,
it
was connected by this great big bridge.
Yeah, it usually has to ride Battlecat for hours to get there, doesn't it? The sorceress calls him, and then about half hour he gets there. But
we got a good amount of sorceress.
Yeah,
we did.
In her Zoar form as well.
Yes, it was really good. I love the fact he's saying, oh, I think that, what's the word? Not
Falcon.
Falcon.
Yeah,
that falcon's talking to me. I think it's the sorceress, and everyone just laughs it off.
Yeah.
And
it's not a big gnome.
She only lives over there. You can literally see her from the palace. But I did like the recasting of Roboto as female, and the sort of the jokey aspect that she got deactivated as a war droid because she tried to kill Duncan by mistake. I thought that was all very funny.
Yeah, and even at the end, Roboto had those see through chest
plate
and the gears.
Yeah,
like
quite
in the cartoon.
Is it too revealing? Yeah.
But the one person who missed out on this was his date at the very beginning.
Oh, yeah.
That's patter. I'd have gone, yeah, we'll have a second date.
Yeah. Oh, I would have been melting at all that.
She could have been a princess of Eternia.
Yeah.
All right, then. We've all loved this.
Yeah, surprisingly.
Every single one of us.
Watch it with tongue planted firmly in cheek.
Totally. Yes.
It does the camp just right.
And when you've watched it, remove your tongue from your cheek and write to us and tell us what you thought about it via show
at
staggeringstories.net.
Say woohoo, Gene.
Woohoo!
There you go.
Yay!
Right, now after watching the amazing Masters of the Universe, it was time to tone it down a little bit. So we rummaged through the old collection and thought, what should we watch? And we watched Doctor Who. Pause for music. Right, this time it was a Hartnell.
Yes.
An existing Hartnell?
Mm. Sensorites.
Yeah.
Well, hadn't been wiped.
Only some of us watched it.
Oh, dear.
Oh.
Did you not watch
it? You didn't.
I fell asleep, but then I watched it again.
That's doing your homework twice.
Exactly.
I've seen it a lot, and yet you're right. After all the colour of Master of the Universe, it's really dull to watch it, isn't it? All that black and white.
I'm going to get this out of the way
go on.
First.
Oh, go on.
I felt sorry for Carol Ann Ford and Susan.
Susan
actually was coming into her own there. She was making decisions for herself.
Yeah. Yeah. A little bit
and
of character,
she was putting her foot down. And then the second the doctor raised his voice and lifted an eyebrow, she caved in.
Yeah. And they even have that scene right at the beginning in the TARDIS where they go, look at how we've all changed. And I was thinking, I know what's coming, Carol. Because this is the story where they decide to do something really grown up with her, but talk down to her like she's younger than ever before.
The doctor was a patronising arse.
I know better than you, child.
Yeah. And when she finally caved into him,
he's almost gaslighting her.
Yeah. When she caved into him and he's gone, well, it's for the best. Isn't it?
You don't really want to annoy someone with like telepathic powers, do you? You don't know what they could do. Whack you with your own cane.
Make you see something.
So that's is it true that the sense sphere is close to the Ood sphere?
According to RTD,
They're very, very similar. You know, the Oods have got their brain born with their brains in their hands. The Sensorites have got that 10p piece they put on their heads.
I think the attitude of the Sensorites is very naive and innocent.
Oh,
and
very timid.
Except for the bad one.
Except for the bad
one. And that's another thing. Oh, the Chamberlain who offs the second in command and takes
the city administrator.
Yeah,
city administrator.
Takes his sash. Apparently, Sensorites can't tell each other apart.
I know.
We could tell them apart because characters were all different shapes.
Yeah. It's even the shape of the face different.
But apparently Sensorites, I'm not sure if that's racism.
That's the only thing it does come across a bit like, because one of them is a bit rotund and more gruff voice than it played on that, so you can tell which one it is.
Yeah. Does anyone remember the early editions of Cracker Jack?
Cracker Jack!
Ooh, you're I could crush a grape.
No, before I could crush a grape.
I do, yeah, with Peter Glaze.
That was the city administrator.
Oh, was it? Hard to tell under the sensor.
Everything.
Now, one thing I did sort of strike similarities with, you know, they said they had three castes in the Sensorite City, you know, workers and two others, which immediately reminded me of the Awara Castle on Minbar.
Yeah.
Did JMS take it from the Sensorites?
Villager?
Doubt it.
It was just elders, workers, and soldiers.
Soldiers, that's it, yeah.
I love this first season of Doctor Who, because they have to find new ingenious ways of keeping them away from the TARDIS. So this time someone burns out the lock and takes it.
Yeah.
I think in Keys of Marinus there was a force field on the glass acid beach, so they were forced to go on a quest. Yeah. So
I preferred it if they'd either taken the TARDIS or they'd put it behind a force shield or something.
Yeah.
Taking the lock out.
Dismantling it.
It makes it feel very more just like a police box and rather than a time travel capsule.
Yeah, and they burn out the lock right next to them, don't they?
Yeah.
And it's like they take the lock, the next thing they do is try to crash the ship into their own sensphere. And you just, that's not quite right, really. But I do like these opening episodes. I think the opening two episodes are quite creepy. That first cliffhanger, where the Sensorites are bobbing outside the window. Yeah. You can't quite make out what you're looking at, can you?
It's just a thing. One thing that did make me chuckle is when I got onto the last episode and they've got the saboteurs down in the
saboteurs. Oh, yes.
All I could think about was Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and the Golga French Amart fleet.
Yes. Oh, really?
That's what I thought of.
Yeah. It's like, number one, get him a seat. Yes, sir. Getting him a seat, sir. Number two, can you...
cheesy biscuits.
I was thinking more of... Magic Thighs and Nerve Room Fondle.
I do wonder where they got Deadly Nightshade from, though, because that's a very earthbound. Were they carrying it on the ship?
Well, you always have some in your pocket in case of emergencies.
Emergency assassinations.
Yeah. I've just fed some to Crumbly.
Bye.
And it turns out that they got excited over the thought of molybdenum, didn't they?
Yes.
But there's some of that on Earth anyway.
And I'm sure there's a load of it in the asteroid belt.
Why go that far?
They just seem very fond of saying the word molybdenum.
Come, they've made one up.
Unobtainium. We had terranium in the next couple of seasons, didn't we? Dalek Master Plan.
Oh, one thing that was stretching the bounds of credulity somewhat was... No, it was Ian about to sort of batter somebody to death with a rolled-up map.
Oh, I love that bit. He's got to roll up the map and then just hands it to him.
Yeah, I'm watching it thinking, oh, is it a big spider? Well,
it's like the Hitchhiker's film. He's got a towel. Oh, no.
Run away.
Did you notice Barbara's incredible tan once she came back from her 2 weeks off? Glistening more than He-Man was.
Yeah, that, the pilot, whoever it was, from the ship she was with, never returned, did he?
No. That's right, yeah.
She was left up on the ship with this guy and he
stayed up by himself.
One thing that did raise a chuckle was, who was the female pilot of the ship?
Carol,
that's right, yeah. Yeah, she was speaking to one of the Sensorites, and I was trying to work out whose head was bigger.
she had 60s hair.
I know.
It seemed to change a
bit. That's all the back combing.
Yeah. She's competition with Barbara, wasn't she? Yeah. Back combing.
Well, a couple of the, not the cliffhangers, other side
recaps.
Of the cliffhangers. The recaps. Recaps were completely refilmed. It was completely different.
That was a completely different
Sensorite floating outside the window at the beginning of episode 2.
I thought the script, the storyline itself was quite interesting. I mean, it harks back to the Americans or us invading America and that kind of stuff. But I quite liked the premise of the story, that they become so afraid, no insular. but it's one of those ones where looking at them now is a lot slower than...
Yeah. In fact, there's a slow creeping round corridors in episode two, isn't there?
That's what we commented on, wasn't it, Ian? Yeah. He's got to walk round a console. It took him like 20 minutes. And
the funny thing is, it's as slow in the audiobook I listened to. But did you notice that amazing shot right at the beginning of episode one where they're in the console room of the TARDIS and they walk directly through the TARDIS doors onto set?
Yeah.
And then they actually put a cut in.
I did not notice that.
I thought that was a really nice shot.
Yeah.
Also, the fact that the one who was driven mad on John had no peripheral vision.
Oh, definitely no peripheral vision. No. Barbara and Susan were literally just standing to the side. Yeah. And he came in, turned round and was facing them at one point, but no peripheral vision. And he was mad.
He was hallucinating. I must be hallucinating them. They're not there.
And it's the fact that we're so far in the future, but they were still using pen and ink to write a note.
The map. Yeah. Treat with a pen, yes.
Well, was this the first time we have one of those exciting shots where at the bridge of a ship and the doctor's piloting it, giving orders.
Yeah.
And he looks over his shoulder and goes, Barbara, check those three lights are on. And she just walks next to him.
And looks at them.
It's like, yes, they are.
They're on.
I can't possibly do it myself, Barbara.
Again, peripheral vision. Yeah. It's outside.
Perhaps on sense sphere.
Yeah.
People don't have peripheral vision.
And there's one Billy fluff which is quite good. It goes something along the lines of, well, I think that settled that little bit of solution.
Well, they all seem to be fluff. Everyone was doing it.
One of the sense writers. Yeah. That's quite a bad one as well.
Yeah, because he just starts shaking the antidote in his hand. This is the... Doesn't work too well on bike.
Carol does one. Yeah. And Chesterton at one point was Cheston.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's normal.
Even Barbara had one at one point where she kind of stumbled over the words.
Yeah. Well, she was about to go on holiday, so, you know.
The excitement.
That's it. But I am quite chuffed that they got character options toys in B&Ms. I don't know if they came up with the original range, but you had Sensorites with a Hartnell figure or perhaps a William Russell. And they also did the Vord from Keys of Mariners. That's something I never thought I'd see. Yeah.
Growing up Teletubby.
Yeah.
But no, this was a six-parter, which usually makes me want to kill myself.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed this.
Not too bad. There's a bit too much politicking and it's a bit too simplistic. You can't quite believe that these Sensorites are that naive.
Yes.
Not
when
one of them is clearly evil.
Clearly evil.
Can they not sense that? They're Sensorites.
Yeah. I like that.
Credit where credit is due. Yes, he's evil, but he doesn't think of the disguises until I think it's Susan or Barbara mention it. Yeah, the only way they can tell you apart is the colour. That's the only time that he actually thinks of himself.
Yeah, it might be Carol that says that.
I wonder what Sensorites are doing to the crew during their spend animation. It might be a graze, but they do unspeakable things warm. To them.
Because they said they came up and woke them up to feed them.
And probe them, probably.
Yeah.
That's what they remember.
And do they gift the Doctor a new cape
the cloak.
Oh, yeah, because he got what did he get shredded by?
It's meant to be the people hiding down
in the previous crew. Like a bloody T-Rex had been at
him. We do hear a roar, don't we, at the end of the Deadly Nightshade cliffhanger. And he just looks up and shines a torch in his own
face. There was a lot of very good swivelly eyeball acting.
Oh, yeah, he did.
William Hartnell was on form here.
Yeah. I mean, he was getting an idea or thinking of a solution. The eyes would go back and forth.
And was it John, when he was a bit insane, that just looked straight at the camera?
Yeah, he did a few times.
Very intense eyes, didn't he? Yeah. And all that hair everywhere.
It didn't seem to be breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah, just to tell us the Sensorites were coming. Yes, we know.
It's like Deadpool. He's insane, so he can see, he knows he's in the fourth
mate. And the Sensorite scientists have been working on this problem, couldn't figure out it all came from one location either.
Yes, yeah. Oh, yes, the aqueducts, yes. Yeah.
But they were poisoning different aqueducts at different points in time.
But it was the same aqueduct, they were poisoning different outlets.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Because it was like section 7 and then section 5 and then section whatever.
Yeah.
They weren't very good scientists.
They weren't, clearly.
You're right, though. I do enjoy it for some reason. Yeah. It might be slow and it might be simplistic.
And it had possibly the worst fitting mask ever, one of those sensors.
Yeah. In that first, second or third episode, the side view, terrible.
Yeah. It was insanely not fitting.
And also, did you know they've got those circular walkways throughout the ship? Yeah. Did you spot the Sensorite tripping into shot over his own flat foot?
I spotted Susan nearly tripping over the sticky out bit when her and Barbara had to hammer on a door.
Actually, I spotted when Ian and whoever it was were trying to get through the corridors of the ship in the second episode. They bumped into one of the walls and it very clearly opened. It's like,
Yes, that's right.
I mean, the Sensorites do have an excuse. They've got round feet. So.
True, they've got very wide feet.
Because when you see them the first time, one of them's treading on the other one's foot isn't it?
Yes. A couple of boom
I also like the fact that they got away with overlighting everything because the Sensorites don't like the dark.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Although they haven't invented artificial lighting, apparently.
So that's Sensphere lighting, whatever sun is. Yeah.
They don't like light, they don't like sound, do they?
I was going to say, you just raise your voice slightly to them and they're holding onto their ears.
Yeah. Get little headphones they can put on.
Yeah.
A little torch they can go down into the cave.
So why didn't these moronic explorers, instead of poisoning them, why don't they just start shouting at the leaders and
cursing,
taking them over that way?
They could easily have taken them out.
They'd been affected by the Sensphere or something and gone slightly mad.
They had been driven
mad. They weren't thinking rationally either.
Yeah.
But no, as you say, I think it's a good fun one. It's not too deep, you know. It's got enough of a plot there to keep you interested, but you're not going to write an essay or anything on it. But yeah, it is a fun one to watch. Yeah,
and they're laying the groundwork for Susan leaving as well.
But giving her the worst character development ever.
Yeah, her saying she sometimes wishes she had a place to call her own.
Yes. Yeah. And there's a scene right at the beginning where they do something. I think it's the first time Doctor Who does it, where they're talking about an adventure we didn't see.
Yes, I wonder if that's the first time it's happened.
Because I asked Keith if Big Finish picked
it up. Henry VIII.
Yeah.
The Doctor throws something at him. Yeah. Oh, sorry, threw it back.
Also the first time when they mention an aspect about Gallifrey as well, because Susan was talking about there's an orange sky.
And silver leaves.
Yeah, I think it must be.
I think it's interesting when you look at Susan. She's although she's a Gallifreyan, she's the equivalent of about 16, 18. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you look at Rose, who's about 16 or 18, and how the two characters are one still being very much a child, because in the 60s that's what they thought like, but now she's very much an adult.
Yeah. Can you imagine Hartnell talking down to Rose?
She wouldn't take it.
And she definitely wouldn't accept a jolly good smacked bottom.
Yeah, yeah, she might from Tennant.
Let's face it, you'd accept one from Tennant. Right, so we also enjoyed the Sensorites, because it's fun. Again, don't turn your brain on too much, but it's solid. Yeah. So watch The Sensorites. It's on BBC iPlayer. Then write to us via show
at
staggeringstories.net.
Woohoo!
Well done!
And you can bet that 3 months after this, Earth comes and invades the Sensphere.
Of course. Yeah.
Because why wouldn't they?
To get into Malibu. Right, do we have any feedback?
Oh,
we do have
a feedback. First of all, we have another floating head.
We do. We've got a floating head shaped like a Riddler.
Can he say Malibu?
We'll ask him. 1, 2, 3.
Hello, Heather Pertwee!
How many hats has he got on?
What hat has he got on now?
He's got Tom's hat, and there seems to be baseball cap.
That's on handles.
Oh, that's on handles, okay. Yeah, yeah. But he does have Inky Dinky and Rinky McSquirts a lot all over him.
Yeah.
And hello to Terence.
Dave Zill of the Mighty.
Yeah.
Dangerous Churchill.
Various Nazi nebulous. Spark.
Folded up and propped on a chair, Clara.
With a whole bunch of goats around her.
Her buxom breasts have popped.
Well, that I don't think it's gone
deflated.
Deflated, yes. Yeah. Mm.
We got some spare ones down here. They yeah. haven't.
Oh. Don't know what those haven't deflated.
It's just the Clara ones.
Right, we've heard from Michael, the tin dog.
Hey!
Hello!
He says, sorry I can't send audio feedback this time. Real life seems to be getting in the way. Sorry. But I simply had to send a message saying congrats on reaching show 500.
Thank you.
I suspect we were all a lot younger than we were 500 episodes ago and not yes. necessarily wiser. And your theme music still makes me smile. Oh, and thanks for introducing me to loads of stuff I may have otherwise missed. Here's to the next 500. Right, I'm off to record show 1500.
Show off.
Be seeing you, Michael the Tin Dog.
Congratulations.
Thanks, Michael. Congratulations on 1500.
Yeah, congratulations. And he's
similar age to us in terms of podcast. A bit before, a bit after, I can't remember which it is. But yeah, so if we've been doing one every 2 weeks, roughly. Mm. He's been doing more than one a week.
Yeah.
For nearly 20 years.
Yeah.
Maybe about 20 years.
We have no life.
Wow.
Don't think about it, Karen. It's just don't even think about it.
I know. I know.
Hello, Staggerers, and hello, Head of Pertwee, and hello, Cardboard Grunhilde Nobnacker, and hello, Cardboard Clara, and hello, Moomins, and hello, Goats, and hello, Dangerous Churchill, and hello, Nazi Spock, and hello... Oh, God, I'm going blank. That's quite a few of you. Hello. And hello to everybody. Forgive my brain for not remembering you all in this moment. How are you all?
Good.
I thought you did a wonderful episode last time and had a great discussion, and I thought I would contribute to that discussion today, which is basically our memories of how we discovered and fell into our passions for science fiction and fantasy and all of that.
Yep.
And my answer is quite similar to El Presidente's, which is basically that things like Doctor Who and Star Wars, Stargate, and the Marvel and DC superheroes were always kind of around. He didn't necessarily say all of that, but he remembered Doctor Who, but was just always around, and Star Wars was always around in my time. So I feel like just through osmosis, I knew a lot about the stories and the characters and their backstory and things like that. But at some point I realized that I really like stories and storytelling, and that's the sort of story and storytelling that I like. It's usually involving a bit of imagination, a little bit of pretend and, you know, magic or science in ways that our science doesn't do yet and things like that. Yeah. So I've always quite liked that. But it started off probably with my mother reading the Chronicles of Narnia to me.
Yes.
And I loved that. And I love those stories, even if I'm not so crash hot on the fact that it's basically just the Bible. Yes. But I like the stories, and I really like the various adaptations they've been, the one with Tom Baker in it, but also the early 2000s ones by Andrew Adamson, who also did Shrek 1 and 2. I think he only directed a few movies, but he directed some classics. I really like those movies a lot because I like the characters and I like that story and that world. And then for TV or for film or for visual elements, it was probably repeatedly watching a VHS of Star Wars, of New Hope, over and over again.
Original cuts, probably.
Actually, speaking of memories, I recently went through and I watched the original trilogy again for the first time in a long, long time, and they're just great films.
Yep.
But speaking of sci-fi and memories, I've got a very specific one about Return of the Jedi. I had, like I said, the VHS of A New Hope. I'm pretty sure that was a birthday present at some point. Mm. And then somebody else said that they recorded The Empire Strikes Back. This must have been in 1999 because network television in Australia was doing a marathon of the other films before Phantom Menace came out. And so, you know, we watched the first one, and then someone said, I'm going to record the next one. And then they did that. And I thought, oh, I didn't think of that. Oh, I'm behind. But then I knew the next week Return of the Jedi was going to be on. So I got one of my VHSs ready. And I might have used pocket money to buy a new VHS because I'd recorded other things I wanted to keep. So I was there recording on commercial television. So there were ad breaks every now and again. And whenever the ad break started, I'd be sitting there right at the television so that I could, one, make the screen as big as possible from my perspective, but also I was right there to press the play and stop button or play and record button, and I have this distinct memory, because there were several outbreaks, but one of them I remember clearly during the Battle of Endor, where the fighting started on the surface itself, but also in space. And there's a bit where an AT-ST shoots, I think, three trees in a row. Like, it was just a visual thing. I don't, genuinely, if you think about battle logistics, it wouldn't have worked, but it looked very good. It shoots these three sort of young sapling trees, and they just break apart. And it was, you know, obviously showing off, I suppose, pyrotechnics in a way, even though there wasn't much flame, but it was showing off what they could do on set. And it was just giving a really cool visual. And then it cuts to the space battle, and you've got the Millennium Falcon flown by Lando and Nine Num. And then you've got, I think, Wedge Antilles is there, and he says, there are three more coming in. But anyway, between those two shots and that depiction of the battle taking place in both on the surface and in the air, or in the orbit even, I remember an ad break starting. And so on a VHS, which I might still have in storage somewhere, I don't have a player, but I might still have the tape itself. I remember something like, you know, get crazy deals at, and then I'd stop. I forgot what company it was, but, you know, advertising something. And then I realized the structure of the ad break was that towards the end of the ad break, they'd be advertising something else coming up on that network. And in this case, it was advertising the next movie, because Saturday night was movie night at that point in time. And it was advertising the next movie, or next Saturday. I also distinctly remember next Saturday at 6:30 p.m., and like, it was movie night is going to be this, but for 3 weeks in a row it was Star Wars. And so I've got this distinct memory of that shot where the trees are kind of being exploding because they're being shot by an AT-ST, and then cutting to one of the shots of the space battle. And it's just a weird, distinct, specific, also time capsule of a memory, because you know, technology's moved on so much from then. We don't have really use. And we don't use it all, VHSs. It's collectors and things like that who really do it. Now, we have moved on from VHS. We've moved on from that sort of thing. Yeah. But that is something that's going to be with me for a long, long time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, for me, getting back to the subject that I started talking about, you know, our memories of sci-fi and how we got into it, it was Narnia and Star Wars. But, you know, Doctor Who was always on. I remember before the new series, the ABC was showing Tom Baker episodes. So every now and again, I'll go back and watch a Tom Baker story and I'll go, I've seen this. I don't feel like I remember anything. I couldn't tell you what's going to happen next, but I have seen it because I know that set and I know those other guest actors, and I sort of know what's going to happen, but I couldn't predict it. I couldn't put my money on it, but I have seen it. And then the new series started.
Yeah.
But, you know, everyone, a lot of people in Australia have fond memories of Doctor Who. Australia has been quite good to Doctor Who because we just like it. And so a lot of people remember Tom Baker from one, their childhood, but two, those repeats. But yeah, a lot of these things have just been around. So I just sort of remember them from, or I just know of them through osmosis. And then I've dived in over the years. But something else I'd just like to talk about is that's my memories of things that are from the past and how I got into these lovely fandoms that we know, or being a fan of these lovely things that we like. Sometimes the fandoms aren't very nice. Unless we're here on this podcast, or as I've discovered, I really like reaction videos. So yes. I tend to engage with fandom through watching people either discover things or introduce me to shows. But I just want to talk about some things that I've seen, or actually one of them is played recently, but one of them was Masters of the Universe, which I don't know if you're going to be talking about, but I saw that some of you saw it, and I had a lot of fun. That's another one of those osmosis things, and I might have seen some of the cartoon at some point, but I didn't see the Dolph Lundgren movie, and I haven't really sat down to watch the cartoon, but I do remember bits of it. I did remember the basic premise, but, you know, it's a great cast.
Yeah.
So I watched it for the cast, and I discovered some new actors because of it, the man playing He-Man, playing Adam. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was very Marvel, and I mean that in a good way. I know a lot of people seem to be down on Marvel these days, but it felt quite Thor Ragnarok. It was fun, bit irreverent.
Colourful.
I liked it a lot. The effects were really quite good. The costumes were really good, and the creature design and creature costumes were quite good.
Trap jaw.
And that's something I appreciate, that some movies are sort of switching back into. We had that with D&D, Dungeons and Dragons, Honor Among Thieves.
Chris Pine one, really good.
Something else that does practical effects quite well, a good mix of CGI and practical effects, is Supergirl. And I saw that, and I had a great time with it. It was a lot of fun. I was actually quite moving at points too. I've talked about it before, but I do have some mental health issues, and sometimes they flare up and I have, you know, a depressive episode or a particularly anxious period of time, and I've got to kind of navigate that and get through that. I often use superheroes and their overcoming of adversity as sort of like just a way to do that. a way to get through it. And it was kind of nice to see a superhero be doing that. Because Supergirl's not in the greatest headspace at the start of this. And she kind of finds a purpose towards the end of it. Not too spoilery. You could probably predict that was going to happen if you haven't seen it. But yeah, good film. A lot of fun. And one last thing.
Oh, yeah.
I recently played 007 First Light. And that might be the best James Bond thing I have interacted with in a long time. I liked the Daniel Craig films quite a lot.
Yes.
And there are some of the other ones that I quite like, but the film's sort of got a bit samey. Even in the Craig era, there was definitely the Craig tone, and you sort of knew what Sam Mendes, the director of most of them, was going to do and stuff like that. It was good to watch, but it had a feeling. It's a bit like being in the third season of a Doctor Who executive producer, like, you know, Moffat style. Yeah. When you're in the middle of a Moffat era, I really like that era, so it doesn't bother me. But some people might go, "Yeah, oh yeah, there's that." But yeah, this was fresh and exciting because it, if you don't know, it's a video game about a young James Bond, a new recruit into the training program for the 00 program, and he was an SAS officer, and you are that at the start. And then eventually you're recruited by MI6. And it's just fun. And actually, it's a really great way because all games have a tutorial to teach you the controls and teach you how the mechanics of the game and how it works. This one did it in such a genius way. It was the training montage that you'd see in a movie where you're recruiting someone. And so you'd learn how to do a stealth aspect. And that was happening for a month for this character. And then you'd learn it something else, and that was happening in the next month, and you get the idea that the characters are honing their skills. It was such a great way to be somewhat cinematic, but also good gameplay. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. And one thing that I sort of hadn't really realized, because I've only ever played, GoldenEye was the only other James Bond game I played. But gadgets work so much better in games than they do in the movies. And so the gadgets in this are a lot of fun. And I really liked it. It's a good game. I really like the voice acting. Actually, probably they did motion capture as well, but the acting's great. Story's great. With some of the best storytelling from James Bond I've seen in a while. And it's just a lot of fun. And it sold a lot of copies. So I really hope we get a sequel. That'll be really good.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I think that might be me talking about some memories of the past, talking about what I've done recently. So a bit of a flotsam and jetsam, if you will.
Indeed.
And I'll leave you to it. And I'll get this to you now because I'm actually recording this the day you record.
Ooh.
Hopefully Adam noticed it because sometimes he doesn't and it's in the next episode. At which point this whole bit now is a bit awkward because you're going to be going, nope, it's in the other episode. Or
that was
you're
two
saying,
episodes.
Yeah, we got it, Reese. Just shut up and go away. So I'll shut up and go away.
We got it.
Skinnier teeth.
Thank you.
Yeah, I completely forgot to mention Chronicles of Narnia last time because, of course, I think it was 88 they did the BBC version, didn't they? And then I collected all the books from the school book club. And talking about cutting out the adverts on things, I did the same for UK Gold repeats when they first started. Yes. And if the weather was bad with Eurobo, you used to get interference. And I'd pause it halfway in the episode. And then a Doctor Who trailer for the game used to come on, which was Dalek Attack, and I'd have to unpause. Never get the whole thing.
In the early
there.
Days, the first video recorder we got, we were a Betamax family.
Oh, yes.
And it was just before the Five Doctors. And like Reese, I'd saved up my pocket money and I bought myself a VHS video to record on, and it was £6.99.
Wow. A lot of money back then.
I'd never have any money again after that.
Yeah.
And I had it all set up for the Five Doctors. And I pressed play when I thought it was going to start. And then Terry Wogan carried on waffling.
Yeah.
And so I pressed pause to wait. And then it cut in, so I pressed play again. But back then, there is a little bit of a delay. So I have Terry Wogan going, and of course this is an amalgamation of doctors. And then I miss a second of William Hartnell.
My first copy was on Betamax 2 off air, and there's a weird wobble in the picture with the K9 saying, don't go, danger, whatever. So every time I rewatch Five Doctors, even now,
I still think about that
weird wobble on the picture. And likewise with Star Wars, which I recorded off air at some point. At the end, is your voiceover guy saying, next is Scarecrow Mrs. King.
It's like Graham Norton all over again.
Yeah, keep thinking of that. Which I've never seen, even though it's Bruce Boxheider, really, isn't it?
I used to have the same thing with interference. If, like, the tape got chewed up in the machine and there was always that bit where the sound dropped out and you'd get that line going up down the screen. I kind of expect that when I'm rewatching things.
Yeah. So, something like Five Doctors have been watched over and over again.
You take a bit of plastic out so no one can record over it and then you're dead. Sell a tape and that's it. It's been recorded over.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to First Light. I've played 10 minutes maybe of it so far. I died on the beach. That's as far as I go.
Oh, don't worry about it. We all die on the beach.
Well, best place to do it. The tide can pick you up.
Yeah. Exactly.
No, it's a very good game.
Yeah. I've got next week off. I will play it next
Excellent.
Week.
Excellent. Oh. Lead us out, Crumbly.
And so, dear listeners, that brings us to the end of another podcast.
Aww.
But never fear, in the next one there'll be more of the same, more fun, frivolity and jollity, more news and reviews, more who old and new. So until that...
H.
Not M for molybdenum.
All right, M for molybdenum.
Good luck, everyone.
Massively...
Mohican...
Monstrous...
Megatron...
Masters...
Masterly...
With mice minced with milk...
comes meandering
towards us
maliciously. This is me, Crumbly, saying, seeing you.
Cheerio.
Farewell.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Au revoir.
Don't wish, Miss Tick had said. Do things.
You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, Series 1, number 501, featuring Adam Purcell, Andy Simpkins, Fake Keith, Asdman, Jay, Keith, and the head of Gene Riddler. The views expressed here are those of the speakers and don't necessarily represent those of the other speakers on the site. No copyright infringement is intended. This has been an El Presidente and Fake Keith production for www.staggeringstories.net.
Oh, yeah, okay, we'll do that now.
Scott's going to take a picture of you, so look intelligent. Now look intelligent.
I didn't actually start recording.
I believe the word you're looking for is dough.
Happens. Men your age, it's just something you've
Shouldn't
got
you
to
say
accept.
Something like Staggering Stories, Series 1, Episode 501, Take 1.
Series 2, Episode
Series 2,
2.
Episode
oh,
2.
Sorry.
Gene, did you listen to the podcast from Reese and Mr. M? Sorry, the feedback.
Not yet. I think I need to be in a more emotionally stable position.
Right. So, should we hold our breath now?
Yeah, okay.
3, 2, 1.
Lasted a long time, didn't it?
Just heard this little squeak.
I was trying to hold the breath by taking a big breath.
Should we try again?
Oh, not again.
3, 2, 1. Oh, you're useless!
Children!
Doing anything! Oh, God.
There we go.
Right. Are you going to be sensible or are we going to make you sit in the corner?
I'm going to have to sit in the corner.
It's going to be one of those podcasts.
Yep.
This is why the camera's
Stop.
On them.
Yeah.
3, 2, 1. You did very well.
That would do.
I'm going to have to.
That's as good as it gets.
Well, the cats, just as well the cats didn't meow partway through that.
Because
yeah.
I need to see if number 6 lights up. Hang on. Oh, where are we? Yeah. Number 6
there. Feels like you're underwater.
Yeah.
Falling
in the water.
It's slightly lower than the vent.
Whatever that sound is on a microphone.
It's me tapping the microphone just to...
Okay. Don't fall over.
About to do a solo on electric guitar there.
Which are we doing first, Sensorites or He-Man?
He-Man.
He-Man.
Because Scott is trembling with
he's
excitement.
He's trembling at the
over there.
No.
Have
no,
I done my homework?
No,
oh,
no,
I've done it
no,
twice.
He's trembling with an...
Participation.
Apple juice, Jim.
I'm fine with Warrior Walter.
Okay.
Get one anyway, Adam, and I'll spill it on the carpet for her.
Ooh. That was low. That was low.
Very harsh, Scott.
Well, it's part of the role. I'm keeping her chair warm.
You are. Have you farted in it twice yet?
Not yet, but I'm okay, building. We'll remember that. Remember that 7-Up I downed before I left?
Oh, Burp City.
Well, you need to have a crisis in it as well.
Excellent.
Yeah, you've not had a crisis in that chair yet, so, you know.
Well, we're about to review He-Man, so there's one coming.
Yeah.
There's a possible new trend.
When you hear me quiver.
Jesus. Is there anything
Adam,
else you want to
say? What the hell, man? Sit down. Just sit. And don't move again. Jesus.
You asked me to move.
Yeah, but not the microphone stand.
Oh, I'm drooping.
What's
now?
He doing?
He's just turned into Mick Jagger circa 1968 and he's trashing his own room.
He's taken a dose of the clumsy drug.
Yeah. Let's face it, we could have gone on for hours about that.
Yeah. Did he mention Big Jim?
No, we didn't.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that was also another sort of Easter egg there as well.
Yeah, did you... I think I'm pretty sure I spotted a Lion-O Thundercat.
No, I didn't.
Well, also the... What was the name of that statue that he took the sword from as well? Because that was like one of the original
designs.
That's right,
one of the original designs, wasn't it? Did it begin with Z?
It was a T, actually. Like a Torek or something.
Torek.
Yeah.
Because that whole scene in the shop was funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really wiggling his eyebrows at everyone, going, have you got my sword? No.
Goth sales assistant got him.
Yeah.